he's teaching the whole week, as you probably know, a Beit Bhavana, and also Shabbat next week, and it's essential that you hear Keith when he's here. It's very, very precious. So I'm going to talk a little bit about death and the deathless. And it's the kind of insofar as the wheel of life, Paticca Samuppada, is expressed metaphorically as a circle or as a wheel, then it's kind of the end of the wheel. But that's the metaphor, and it doesn't mean that there is any direct causation in all of the wheel. But it's the last step, and it's the big one, and it's the one that we are all faced with, and it's the big fear of all of us, and the big consequence in a way of the view of samsara, that we have to die, and we do the best we can to avoid it, and avoid thinking about it, and avoid meeting it, and doing everything we can to stop it. But there's something about the wheel of life that if we're there, then the inevitability of death is the one that that we struggle with. As there is birth, then there is death. When there is birth, there will be death. Whatever is born must pass away. There is nothing that can escape that, and nothing we can do about it. So, in a sense, it's already in the conditioned world. As there is birth, there is death. But as there is becoming, there is birth. And as there is attachment, there is becoming. And as there, so, you know, in a sense, every part of the chain of the wheel of life is inevitable once we're on the wheel. But death seems more inevitable than everything else, and more scary than everything else. That's for you, Eri. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, you know, this is, it's like the fundamental mantra of the Dharma, which is everything that arises must pass away. And just we see that with death in the most scary, the most biggest, the most dramatic form that we can imagine as beings struggling to keep alive. And the thing that we do is most of our life we are busy with circling around death like a moth around a flame. We are just busy with it, but we don't call it death. We call it wanting to be comfortable, we call it wanting to have money in the bank, we call it wanting to be too busy so we don't have to think about stopping or dying or not being. We call it the drive to be, to have, to enjoy. Basically, we want things to be the same. We're having been born, we want to stay like that. We want things to be as we know. We are afraid of the unknown. The unknown for us means death. So, and we're busy with that all our life, trying to get the known and keep away the unknown, because we identify that. The death, in a way, for us is the unknown. And so anything that smells of the unknown, we tend to keep it away. And there's a nice story in the... but expresses this in the Mahabharata, which I can't remember, I've forgotten the name of the king. Maybe someone can remind me of the name of the king. No, I can't remember his name. Anyway, he's on the journey with his dog called Dharma. And they meet the they come to a lake and they meet the Naga, and the Naga is this kind of, it's like the snake in the biblical tradition, a holder of wisdom and also scary. And the Naga appears in the lake and says, you can cross the lake if you answer me three riddles. And one of the riddles is, what is the most extraordinary thing in the universe? And because he's the king, and you know, he gets it right. And the extraordinary thing is that the answer is that all human beings are going to die, but behave absolutely as if they're not. And this mysterious thing is he's found so extraordinary, that the death is so inevitable, we behave exactly as if it doesn't exist. And so of course it's about attachment, and attachment that keeps this illusion of the wheel going round and round. Attachment to survival, attachment to being born, attachment to what keeps this sense of illusion alive, that we're here forever, that that things will be the same, that I exist, that this is my body and I want it, and I want to keep it, I want to have it, and I want to have it nice and comfortable. This life, I want it nice and comfortable. And that busyness, that attachment and that busyness is all about circling around death, in a way, but circling around death in the biggest sense of not being, of not circling around the not, wanting the having, and not wanting the not being. And of course, creates a lot of anxiety, and it's very deep and very automatic, and we can't just say, oh, I'll think my way through it. I do go to lots of Dharma retreats and I'll sort of think my way out of it. I'll get another view of death and dying by just practicing enough and so on. It's something very, very deep. We really need to go through again and again and again at the deepest level the sense of meeting something beyond that chain of becoming, birth and death. It's just something out of there completely. Mm. And that's not easy. And we better not have the illusion, and we do have the illusion, by the way, no, we have, you know, I'm okay and I'm in present moment and everything is fine and I've got lots of Dharma practice and so on. And then we get hit by our death or others, people's death, and it undoes that, because it's so fundamental to, and such a fundamental challenge to our very existence, and our attachments are very, very deep. And the Buddha said, you know, we die because we're attached to death, because we only die because we're attached to dying. It's a big challenge, but I really don't want to deal with the issue of rebirth and all of that right now, especially because I'm sitting in front of Keith, who is, you know, way he gave a course last time he was here on the Bardos. Mm. And maybe some of you were there. So I'm not really going to deal with it here, other than to relate a little bit to the canonical Buddhist teaching. And there's one very nice borrowing from Keith's knowledge there, but one very nice phrase that I like, an image, which is that dying is like a hair being drawn out of butter. There's this beautiful Tibetan image. There's like nothing, a hair drawn out of butter. There's like nothing left. You know, it's so much fine disappearing of everything that we are. So how can we say, build big issues around rebirth, which involve so much belief and so much a sense of hanging on to a self, and the whole rebirth issues bring us back actually into pain and suffering in a certain way. And you know, I've had lots and lots of dialogues about this with all kinds of different teachers, from the Tibetan, from the Theravada, from the Zen world, and I think we just have to be really, really careful about the way that this increases or continues dependence on birth and gives birth legitimacy, but we call it rebirth. And it, we just have to be very, very careful. I'm not saying we shouldn't have explore this issue, but in the early Buddhist teaching, it really wasn't an issue. There wasn't there a kind of a teaching about rebirth which is of importance for us. And the Buddha was quite clear that rebirth is really about the moment. That we have to ask ourselves, birthing is happening now in the moment, and dying is happening now in the moment, and our actual birth of a body coming out of the womb is one moment, is one moment of birthing. Our actual death, that the body loses its last breath, is one moment of dying, because the dying and the birthing and the dying and the birthing are continuously happening in this wheel. It's just non-stop. And someone asked the Buddha, what happens to you after you're born, after you die? And he said, do you see me now? Do you know me now as I am this minute? And if you don't, how can you say anything about me when I'm gone? And you don't even know me when I'm here. You don't even know me, what this being is that you're looking at right now, this apparent body. Do you know that? So how can you say that, you know, something about when this body... So he said it very specifically. I am not... he said, am I the same as the aggregates, the pieces, the components that make me? Well, obviously no. Am I not the components that make me? Obviously no. Am I bigger than, do I own the components that make me? Obviously not. But yet, are they nothing to do with me? They're something else other than what you see in front of me. Obviously not. So in other words, he took to pieces this whole concept of human being, which is born into a human being. He just took it to pieces. You can't see it. You can't know what this human being is when it's born. So you can't know what this human being is when it's gone. The whole thing is not in that level of explanation and thinking about. It's just on another level altogether. There is a wonderful poem, one of my favourite. There's a wonderful book, one of my also favourite books, called The Conference of the Birds. Mm. It's a Sufi text, and I love it. And I've had a real love for it for many years. And There's a Penguin edition, which is, it's all in poem, in rhyme, and they're teaching stories about the journey to awakening. And there's hundreds of beautiful stories in there to illustrate difficulties and hindrances and issues on the way to awakening, all in poetry, all in rhyming poems, all in beautiful images. Anyway, one of the small stories there is a story about the death of Socrates. And the students come to Socrates when he was dying and said, Master, where shall we bury you? And he says, bury me where you can find me. It's very similar to what the Buddha said, you know, if you could bury me where you can find me. And he said, not one atom of me can know what it is. Not one piece of me can know what it is. And I can't know what all the pieces are. So how I can't find myself, so how can you find me? Which it's this beautiful image of the whole sense of a human being with a self inside it that's kind of controlling and knowing what this thing is. It's just blown to pieces. So how can we talk about, you know, what happens after death? And how can we talk about the concepts of what happens after death? And so it takes it all to pieces. And the big challenge is this life with its attachment to the apparent lived being. That's the challenge. And understanding where that comes from, the sense that I am here, I am born into a body, it's my body, I attach to it, I am born and I am going to die. Taking all that to pieces on the most fundamental level. Nevertheless, death for us, because it's non-being, is perhaps the biggest teacher. And so, like every stage in the Paticca-samuppada, it's a teaching as well as an issue of suffering. It goes both ways. And I think on a very ordinary human level, our closeness to death is also our biggest teacher. And it's obviously something that all of us know and we've experienced before, that in this moment, in the pain of meeting death of ourselves and others, including death of loss, death of change, death of not knowing, death of meeting the unknown, death of letting go, all those small deaths and big deaths, they're our big teachers. They bring us to live right on that edge of the unknown, and there are places where there are major sources of awakening for us, and it where in many ordinary, shall we say, ordinary people wake up, where death is such an impossibility for the attachment to the lived being, to who we are, we meet the impossible. And so out in the street, you know, death is the place where many, many people wake up, and they do their best to cover it over, but it's never completely covered over. And you know, we have Yom HaShoah, we had Yom HaZikaron, we had as I was talking to Carmel about it last night, but we do our best to dress it up in different ways and formalize it and try and make rituals out of it and everything, but but it doesn't work. It doesn't. We'll do our best to try and shut it up, death, but it doesn't shut up. And it cannot be shut up. And I have a nice quote from Krishnamurti, and which expresses this quite well. He says, he asked, is it possible for the mind to stop, to put an end to the process of recognition of me and you? Try it, he says. Live for one day or 1 hour as though you were going to die, actually going to die the next hour. If you can live 1 hour as completely as that, you can live completely for the rest of your life. But to die is hard work. Not to die through disease and old age, that's not hard work. That's inevitable. It's what we're all going to do, and we cushion ourselves against it in innumerable ways. But if you die so that you are living fully in this hour, you will find there is an enormous vitality, a tremendous attention to everything, because this is the only hour you are living. You look at this spring of life because you will never see it again. You see the smile, the tears, you feel the earth, you feel the quality of a tree, you feel the love that has no continuity and no object. And then you will find that in this total attention, the me is not. And that the mind, being empty, can renew itself. And then the mind is fresh and innocent. And such a mind lives eternally beyond time. So it's the death here, shifting the view a little bit from death as the big issue to death as the teacher, and death as the and death and dying as the wake-up call, is an important thing for us to keep doing. And Wittgenstein, I got a little quote from Wittgenstein. He said, death is not an event in life. We do not live to experience death. If we take eternity to mean not an infinite duration of time, but timelessness, then eternal life belongs to those who live in the present. That's Wittgenstein. So, I'll talk a bit more about that, about this sense of timelessness or deathlessness being inherent in the awakening in the present. But the issue with death is that it's so big, and it's so strong, and it's so intense, and that we do need to keep doing, as human beings, things to reduce the power of it over us, the power of it to make us act from death. That is all the innumerable ways we cushion ourselves, like I said, like Krishnamurti said, and I called it a moth around the flame of being busy trying to avoid it and dealing with it in our life in projections. And so it is quite important to have ways in which we reduce simply the power of death to control us. And there is a lot of Dharma teaching in the suttas about this. Why I kept my phone open is that someone just sent me the Abhaya Sutta, which is called Fearless, and it's about someone coming to the Buddha and said, I am terrified of dying, and he said, my view is there's no one who is not afraid or in terror of death. And the Buddha said, look, there are those who are going to die and are afraid and in terror of death, but there are those who are going to die and they're not at all afraid of dying in any way. And he said, basically, there's four, he gave it four kinds of attachment which bring us fear of death. And one is the attachment to senses, of course, who desire, fondness, thirst, and fever and craving for sense impressions, for sensuality, for having things in the senses, attachment to the sense desires or aversions. And secondly, there is the passion, desire, fondness, the thirst, and the craving for a body, for being a body and having a body. And then there is morality and sila, and you know, he gives examples of that. And the fourth is doubt and confusion, and busyness with thought, turning in the mind. He called it, the English translation is perplexity. I don't know what the Pali is. Perplexity is just confusion and loss and doubt and confusion, shall we call it. And he says that if you abandon these four areas, which are real classic Dharma, sense impressions or sense attachment to the senses, attachment to me and mine and having a body, issues of sila, purity of our relationship with the world, and confusion and doubt and uncertainty. No, I mean being sila, being living sila, and you can I think feel it deeply in us that there's something. I mean, if you can imagine yourself, you know, the goodness in all of you, all of us here, is there's something in us which is, it purifies our life when we feel pure in our life, that actually does reduce the fear of death, because there's something pure, clean. There's no, we don't have the regrets and the issues and the guilt and the inner struggles and so on that make us feel more vulnerable, to more doubting, more uncertain. So you can see, morality is, sila is, a sense of purity is a connection with the world which is in a way timeless. A sense of being beyond the sense pleasures can bring us to timelessness. Sense of clarity about our meeting with the world brings us to timelessness. So these movements will make us less afraid of death. They will reduce our fear of death. So we would say, almost like classic Dharma, would reduce the power or the otsma, the intensity of our busyness with death and dying, bring us into another place which is more free and more timeless. I remember talking to Erica, an old friend of mine, before she died. She was aged 92, and she was in Klil, and we had a lot. She was a real teacher, and we had a lot of wonderful sessions together. And she said, I think it was the age of, she was then 91, 92, when we had this conversation, and she died at the age of 93. And she said, I don't want people to tell me that death is anything about death, that death is okay to die, or that I've had a good life, or I can die now. I don't want to know about that. I want to know, what really helps me to die is people to tell me what a pure life I've lived, and then I feel I can really die happily. I want people to feel, I want to feel my life was worth it, was my living is worth, my living has been worth living, and then I can die. And I think we can all feel that in ourselves, that, you know, this goodness we have in us, making life worth living is also making it easier for us to die. And even the happiness we feel, which comes from not having regret and issues and struggles, people say, you know, I'm so happy I could die. It's an expression in English. I'm so happy I could die now. And there is something there which is a completeness, which is like, that life is lived right, and therefore dying is not a problem. So just to pass that to you as a kind of a place where death loses its bigness, its a dominance in our inner world. But still,
I understand, you know, what you just said, but I don't understand where the purity of morality comes with the four kinds of attachment that bring fear of death. And it seems so different, mm-hmm. The attachment to sense pleasures, desire for a body, doubt, perplexity. I don't understand what the seal is doing there in the middle of those four.
That's why I use the word purity. Maybe if you understand the word purity.
Attachment to purity?
Being pure.
No, that I understand.
And attachment to doing damage is the opposite of purity. So in other words, by not living with sila, you do damage. When you do damage, it makes karmic waves in your karma. You will find damage happening to you. You will find guilt, doubt coming, other things coming. You will find negative states of mind, and they will stick you in the death world more. You'll find yourself the opposite of what I just said about Erica. So it's that karma of attachment to unwise actions that gives you more of a kind of death issues. So, but let's look at the, this is the in the wheel of Paticcasamuppada. So where's the way out here? And as always, the way out is in our timeless present and timeless meeting point, which is beyond life and death, which is beyond the birth and the death. And an image that I like here is you got a carriage or a car, and we see a car, and we see a thing called a car, which can be our body, for example. We see a thing, a body that's functioning and doing and this and that. Actually, the whole car is working because the wheel is touching the ground at one point only, and that point is the only point which makes the car move, or the carriage, or the wheel. The wheel is turning round. If we look at the wheel, it's a point of view of the wheel turning, or the car driving, and it's process, and it's happening, and it's in time, and the wheel has to turn, and we watch the wheel turn. If we get another view of that, the wheel is touching the ground at one point only, and that point is timeless. You can't say anything about the wheel there. The wheel is still turning, but it's only touching the ground at one point, which is constantly renewing itself. And that's like the timeless moment of our meeting with the world. It's timeless, it's deathless. It's just another image that I like. Another image used for this is the hub of the wheel, the center of the wheel, where there's just space. The wheel is turning. As long as we're in the wheel of, can be the wheel of samsara, the wheel of paticca-samuppada, the wheel of turning, the life process, and so on. We look at a wheel, we're still in this time, we're still in this living, dying, circling around. But there are places there which are there. And that, the moment of our experience, our lived moment, right there, timeless moment of the mind touching the world, there isn't anything beyond there. And that's where our real life is lived. And that doesn't have time in it. And if it doesn't have time in it, it isn't any birth and it isn't death. So presence taken to its real intense place is beyond birth and death, beyond the wheel of samsara. It's beyond attachment. So it's kind of there where, in the deepest sense, that's where the Dhamma practice is leading us. It's a kind of totality of the present which doesn't have in it time anymore. It doesn't have in it birth and death. It doesn't have in it attachment. And it is on us, in our spiritual life, to be there, to know it, and to slowly, as much as we can, let it act in us, and let us go beyond attachment to body, attachment to what dies, attachment to everything, attachment of any kind. The Buddha said attachment to we die because of attachment to death, but any attachment is going to be, is an attachment, and it's the waking up into that timeless moment stops that wheel of samsara and stops the birth and death illusion. It's waking up from the sense that I am born as a body and I die as a body, and it's waking up from those things which we hold so deeply, as we're born into a body. The ownership, the Buddha said, you know, the ownership of the aggregates. I think they're mine. I think this moment is mine. I think this consciousness is mine. I think this perceptions that I know. There's a world out there called the world I know. Me and my history, my biography, my sankharas, all the aggregates that are coming together in this moment of experience. If we the Farekotam, just not put them together as my experience and my life. That's it. The aggregates don't need to be held together. We are attached to them to collect them together, called my body, my experience, the things that I know. And if we see that the most fundamental things in the world are not ours in the first place, this body is not ours in the first place, it just comes and goes when it wants. No one asked us to be born, no one asked us to die, no one asked us to what's going to happen to us the next minute. We're not in charge of it. This body arrives, so it's not ours, and this aggregates are not ours, and the things that we know are not really ours, they're just what we're used to. The fact that we know what we think we know is just an agreement. If we have Alzheimer's, suddenly we don't know. It's just an agreement that we all agree that this is the world that we know. It's all another form of attachment, another form. So things aren't ours in the first place. And that process, just we have to keep learning it and knowing it again and again. And it's the moment that does it. It's this meeting point, like wheel touching the ground, this meeting point with the openness, timelessness of our consciousness meeting the world that does it. I'd like someone to read a poem in Hebrew that Krishnamurti wrote. Maybe you'd like to read it?
Okay. Sure. כמה נחוץ לנו למות בכל יום, בכל דקה למות, למות לכל דבר לכל האתמולים שעברו ולרגע האחד שזה התחלה ללא המוות אין כל התחדשות ללא המוות אין כל בריאה נטל העבר מוליד את המשכו ודאגות היום הזה מולידות את דאגות המחר האתמול שוב ושוב חוזר על עצמו והמחר שלו הוא מעין מחר אתמול אין מנוחה של ממש מתנועה הזו של הזמן אלא רק במוות אך במוות שכזה יש אכן שמחה בוקר חדש זה קור רענן ובהיר חופשי מהאורות והצללים של האתמול שירתה של ציפור זו נשמעת ממש לראשונה וקולות הילדים הללו אינם הקולות שנשמעו אתמול אנו נושאים את זכר היום שחלף וזיכרון זה מאפיל על הווייתנו עתה כל עוד מופעלת נפשנו בידי הזיכרון המכני היא איננה יודעת מנוחה, שלווה, שקט. זוהי נפש עייפה, נפש המעייפת את עצמה. הדבר השרוי בשקט יכול להיוולד שוב ושוב מחדש. אך הדבר השרוי בתנועה, תנועה האוחזת בו ללא כל יכולת להיעצר, מחלה לבסוף את עצמו והוא חסר ערך של ממש. ראשית מעיין החיים נעוץ בסופם.
Actually, this is from Admiral Kosman, not from on Krishnamurti. He was inspired by Krishnamurti, like I was. So, it's Admiral Kosman who wrote this. The word deathless, which in Hebrew would be this deathless, how would you translate it? Imavet or yeah?
Almavet.
Almuti. Almuti. Yeah. It's got in the English. It's got in it something that is actually a continuous process. It's not just a thing called deathless. It's just the language. So I don't know whether in that Hebrew it is okay. Almuti. So that's used a lot in the traditional texts, and it's used a lot in the Theravada monastic world. They describe very often Nirvana as the deathless. It's a language that's used, deathless is used a lot by some people, Nirvana by others, and the unconditioned by others, and these are all more or less the same language for the same thing. But deathless is an interesting and challenging way of describing Nirvana. And the article I sent you on the deathless by Christopher is a nice article on that. The Buddha said, incline the mind to the deathless. and incline the mind, meaning keep the mind there, keep the mind moving to there, keep the mind, instead of the mind circling like a moth around the flame of samsara, let the moth circle around the flame of the deathless, of nibbana. Keep the mind there. And that process of, in a way, dying to everything except the timeless moment, is it.
Can I?
Yeah.
But deathless is all. I think all that you have to do is to bring down the deathless, and then all you have is life, and then there is not an opposite to life, and then there is only life, and then there is deathless. So why bother with it so much?
Because as much as you have a view of life, as life is something that you relate to, you want, it's yours, you live, my life, you're going to be busy with death. Your life will be coloured all the time by the fact that you want it. There will always be a colour, there will always be an interest that you want this life. For example, if you're sick, you want to stop being sick. If someone near you dies, close person to you die, you will cry like everybody. There is always going to be around that, as much as you kind of say, this life is I've got to live fully, which is great, and it will certainly reduce the interest in death. But as long as you have fundamentally and deeply, as you have that I want to live movement in you, there will be I don't want death. And that when you have I don't want death, you also have I don't want the unknown. And in a certain way, you also have I don't want enlightenment. Because enlightenment is a death. Death, enlightenment in a way is a dying. Dying to what you know. Dying to what was. Dying to living in the dream. So there's a death in that as well, which is scary. And then people get very scared. One of the reasons we don't wake up is because of fear of waking up. Because we're going to have to leave everything that we know, in a way, and we're afraid of that. So it's going to be there, around. Therefore, it's not enough to say, I just want to live fully, because that movement is an inviting death. The interesting in the In all the ancient traditions, such as the very earliest tradition, Rig Veda, the earliest myth of India, and also a little bit in the Bible, death arrives as soon as duality arrives. Therefore, as soon as you leave Garden of Eden, Gan Eden, death appears. And very often, the relationship between death and first man becomes in the Rig Veda, Yama was the first man, like Adam Akadmon, and he becomes god of death, like Adam Akadmon becomes the Malach HaMavet because of leaving ejection from paradise is also being thrown into time, from timeless. In paradise there's no time, and therefore there's no death. So as soon as you have duality, you have time and you have death arises. Anyway, I think I'll stop there. Just to say that there's a challenge in that to, as soon as we bring, it's much easier for us to kind of imagine awakening as the unconditioned, or nibbana as stopping, cessation. As soon as we talk about it as deathless, it shakes us up. I think that's very healthy. We should be shaken up. It's really fine to be shaken up. It's a challenge. we really, just like every other part of Paticchasamuppada, which is inviting us to undo our conditioned automatic reactions and our attachments. So death is a big one, but it's only one place to practice. It's only one of the places, the stages, but it's a big one. I have a quote on my screen, which is from Nisargadatta Maharaj, which I think says it all in one short sentence. He says, "Die now into the now." Die now into the now. And I can't think of a better phrase to stick on your refrigerator and wake up to it every morning. Stick it on top of your door as you come in and out of the house. Die now into the now. Mm. Yeah, very beautiful. So let's take a couple of minutes of quiet, and then we have a few questions.